from the Center for the Study of God and Culture and the studios of Faith Talk 1500, it's the Paul Edwards Program. Information, commentary, and podcasts are always online at godandculture.com. Now, here's your host, Paul Edwards.
As a pastor, one of the things that is of utmost concern to me is the fact that when I look out at my own congregation on a Sunday morning, there is a gap. There certainly is a generation gap between young people, vis-a-vis high school young people, and we seem to skip an entire generation and move right into the working class, young adults maybe in their 30s. But there is a visible gap, even in my own congregation, that is made up of the 20-somethings that seem to be quite visibly absent from the Sunday morning worship and, quite frankly, from active involvement in the church. The reasons for this have been accounted for in a sociological way in the new book by David Kinnaman, You Lost Me, Why Young Christians Are Leaving Church and Rethinking Faith. He opens the book by saying millions of young adults leave active involvement in church as they exit their teen years. Some never return, while others live indefinitely at the margins of the faith community, attempting to define their own spirituality. Some return to robust engagement with an established church, while a few remain faithful through the transition from adolescence to adulthood and beyond. Every story matters, he says on his website, and at the website for the book, www.youlostmebook.org is an interactive place where you can interact with this research. David Kinnaman, of course, is the president of the Barna Research Group, the Barna Group, and author of the best-selling book, Unchristian. And David, it's great to welcome you back here to the Paul Edwards Program.
Hey, my pleasure, Paul.
You, in the early part of your book, you define something that I think is very important. You say of this generation that is absenting themselves from church that they're not just sort of different, they are discontinuously different. What do you mean?
Well, when you look at just at even some of the social trends, at the age at which they're getting married, the age at which they're having children, their technological access and, you know, comfort level with technological tools, their skepticism towards authority, this is a generation that's very, very different. And, you know, we hear so often from ministry leaders and families that, you know, this is just the nasty case of the normal, that people will come back to church when they get older. Or when they have children. Well, what happens when they have children, you know, 10 years later than we would have seen in previous generations? And that's what's happening. We're seeing this generation getting married much later, have children much later. All the ways that they're connected to a faith congregation are thinning out. And we've got to pay attention to the significant social and spiritual and technological differences that are taking place with this generation.
This thinning out, David, of the connectedness of this 20-something generation, this post-high school generation to church, is it the church's fault? Is it a distractedness on the part of the 20-somethings? Are there cultural allurements that are pulling them away? Has the church not done its job, or is the culture just too overwhelming?
Well, we try to make the argument in the book that it's actually both, and we, you know, it's not really a book about assigning blame, but we're really trying to look at ways forward for Christians and churches and even families and parents, and really, I say it's a combination of factors that I think you alluded to both of them. You know, in some cases, it's simply the culture has become so much more powerful. Just the number of hours that young people are using media and technology. The culture of distraction that is just true of all of us, regardless of our age. And yet at the same time, we also point to the fact that there are some ways that we're discipling, or better yet, lack of discipling young people, that's not preparing them for the world in which they live, and the culture and the media and really their vocation, the kind of thing that they're called to do in life. And so I think there's some things that we could say, you know, we as a body of church believers haven't done all we could to prepare this generation for the culture that they're called to influence.
I want to play you a clip of an interview I did about a month ago with a young woman. She's in her 20s. She grew up in a very conservative, one of the largest conservative evangelical churches here in the Detroit area. She now lives away from here and is pursuing a master's degree in another state. But she wrote an article for Gornica Magazine, an online magazine, called Sniffing Glue. I don't know if you're familiar with it, David. Megan O'Giblin is her name. It got quite a bit of play on the evangelical blogs. where this young woman said, I was homeschooled. I grew up in church, but when I hit my 20s in college, I became very disenchanted with church. I've isolated a couple of clips of the interview that I did with Megan. This is just Megan talking about why she became disenchanted with church. Here's clip number one.
I come from a very large Christian family, and I'm still very close with my family. So whenever I go to visit them, I attend church with them. And same with my siblings and the churches that they attend. So it's mostly been through my family and friends that I've still sort of stayed connected to the church. I can only speak for myself, I guess. But to me, I mean, if I want to see a rock show, you know, I can go to a concert and see a real rock show. But, if I'm going to church, it's because I want something a little more substantial, I guess, something with a little more meaning that I can't find in the outside world. And I think a lot of that, although I know there's a lot of churches that are still, preaching very theologically dense sermons, but for the most part, I feel like it's become a lot more like motivational speeches instead of sermons and sort of this, just being very cautious that and being very very conscious of how the church is coming off as a product to the unchurched or to young people. And I don't know, that kind of self-consciousness is not very appealing. I would rather visit a church that is, you know, standing by its beliefs and offering something a little more substantial, I guess.
This is a young woman, David, who told me during the course of this interview that she is now spiritually confused, that she no longer believes the profession that she made as a teenager in Jesus Christ as her Savior, that she would consider herself kind of spiritually confused and maybe seeking. And she says that part of the problem is the lack of authenticity in the church not being the church trying to be like MTV and market itself rather than just be the church. In your research, how much of what Megan is saying there is being echoed by others in her generation?
Boy, it was eerie because it sounds so much like the interviews that we did. You know, we did more than 5,000 interviews for this project, a lot of quantitative interviews, the same kind of social research that Gallup and Pew and other groups do. And we also did a lot of qualitative face-to-face interviews. I'm actually a son of a pastor, and so I have a real heart for, you know, these young people to be connected to the church and to what God intends for them in life. And, it's heartbreaking because, you know, what we really learned from this research is you can't out-cool culture. You can't compete with, just as she said, you know, Megan's talking about, if I want to go to a rock concert or a production, I can find that in any other place that's going to be, you know, much better than what a local church can produce. And besides, is that really what God intends? And, this is I don't mean any of this as a critic of churches or church leaders or people that are doing their best to try to, you know, bring people to Christ. But when you hear stories like this, and particularly people who, they're called into, as you said, she's getting a master's degree and, you know, in working to try to become who she believes God has intended her to be, to the extent that she believes in God. And it's just one of these heartbreaking things that, you know, we've had a chance. You could easily hear her saying the title of this book, you know, You Lost Me. And that's really the heartbeat behind this project, is really trying to capture their voice and their story.
Yeah, so much of what you write in your book, I interviewed her probably about 6 weeks ago, and then I read your book about 2 weeks after that, and I'm thinking, boy, this is exactly where this young woman is. She is a metaphor, a living metaphor of what David is writing about in his book. I've got one more short clip from that interview, a compilation of things that Megan said about how disenchanted she is with her childhood faith and why she walked away. Here's clip number two.
Living in this very sort of shallow, media-saturated, advertising-saturated culture, and the church traditionally, I think, has sort of been a refuge from that and a sanctuary. And once that started penetrating the church, it seemed like it wasn't so much a special place anymore. You know, they were trying to do exactly the same thing that the world is doing, only they did it, you know, not as well, because they just don't have the resources that someone like MTV has. I guess personally, I just don't want to speak for my whole generation, but me personally, I really miss the old hymns. And sort of the type of more traditional service that I grew up with. And I do feel like, I know I have some friends who are still believers, friends that I grew up with, and it seems like they're starting to sort of gravitate towards those more traditional old guard churches and even more sort of Orthodox churches. I mean, it's just at some point it's like the church doesn't have anything to offer anymore. Like, I think there's a Spurgeon quote, I believe, where he says, you know, the reason that the church has so little influence over the world is because the world has so much influence over the church. And I think that's kind of become true. Like, there's nothing, it seems like there's very little that's special about Christianity as far as what you find in a contemporary worship service. It's a lot of just sort of a lighter version of stuff you'd find on the radio or, you know, on TV. I don't know, a lot of these things, I didn't realize I had such strong feelings about this until I started writing, you know, so I'm sort of rethinking a lot of things I believe right now, and I guess I'm kind of spiritually confused in a lot of ways.
Is what you hear her saying similar to what you, in these 5,000 interviews you did, David, similar to what you heard for this longing for authenticity, this longing for the church to be something other than what we have made it over the last, say, 30 years in an attempt to reach them? It seems like we've lost exactly what it is that would reach them.
Yeah, very true. Very well stated. And I think one of the things to emphasize that we saw in this research was that every story matters. You know, we came to the conclusion that there are large sort of patterns in the data. So, you know, young people leave because they feel the church is overprotective, just like Megan talked about, that, you know, there is this sort of sheltering from the world. We find that people feel the church is shallow. We find that the church is anti-science, that it's inconsistent or incompatible in some way in their perception with science. You know, it's sexually repressive. I mean, these are some of the negative perceptions that young people give. But like Megan is sort of describing, she's had her own set of individual doubts and personal questions and experiences that have led her to this place. And part of my reason for working on this book, and really I think one of the things, it's a tough book to do, it's a tough book to write, but we really try to point to a lot of the hope about how is it that we actually really have these better conversations and talk about things that matter with young people before they reach, even if they've reached that point of alienation and disconnection, but even maybe more importantly, before they do, and how is it that we as parents and as leaders and as, you know, church folk and as Christians, that we could care differently and maybe more biblically for the faith journeys of this next generation. And so, you know, I think certainly she represents many of the themes, but the thing that keeps coming back to me and you know, my heart goes out to someone like Megan, because each of these young people have a unique story that we need to pay attention to and do a better job of not just always trying to answer their doubts, but really trying to be there for them as a person who genuinely cares about who they are and who they're becoming in Christ.
David Kinnaman, my guest. He's the president of the Barna Group. His new book, You Lost Me, Why Young Christians Are Leaving the Church and Rethinking Faith. You know, as a pastor, we live in a new era. About, I don't know, probably 6 months ago, I stepped out of the pulpit and a young man met me with his iPhone in hand. And he said, Pastor, you mentioned this Hebrew word. And you gave the definition, and I just want to say to you that while you were doing it, I looked it up in my online lexicon here, and you got it exactly right. And I just want to tell you that I appreciated your definition, and I appreciate you being faithful in giving the right definition, because it created a hinge point for the entire sermon, a point that I was making. I guarantee you that Charles Spurgeon never had to worry about one of his parishioners coming up and fact checking his sermons, but this is the kind of access that this younger generation now has. How do church leaders maintain their authority, the authority of the preaching of the word in an era when the kids can all sit there with their iPhones or their other smartphones and say, well, that's not true. You know, he's kind of making it up.
Well, you put it so well. I mean, it's exactly the kind of thing we talk about from, you know, hearing these interviews and hearing the way that young people think about institutions and sources of authority. And again, there's no simple answers to it, but I would tell us, you know, to consider a couple things. One is that, you know, we can't pretend to know more than we do. And, you know, you tell a story that maybe was someone else's story and they're going to find out. You know, you tell an anecdote or you use a quote or you do something that's, you know, maybe not as responsible. You're in a hurry in sermon prep or you're, you know, busy working on something and you miss a point. it doesn't mean we need to be perfect, but we have to be as careful as we can in what we prepare for young people and treat them as the intelligent, responsible people that they are. They're not going to always act that way, but they're going to act to the best of our expectations of them. And, you know, the other side to it is that even in their skepticism of the things we're saying, I find that they're actually really crying out for both respect and relationship from us. And, I mean, I was speaking on the book in Pennsylvania last week, and after I spoke on it, you know, before young people came up, one of them was exactly like Megan, someone who had been a committed Catholic in the past, but no longer. And, you know, they were asking me some really interesting and some tough questions. It was interesting because one of the young guys said, listen, I was looking at these different, you know, speaking habits that you have, and I thought for sure, you know, you were going to touch your glasses 100 times, and I started to keep a tally of the number of times you touch your glasses, and I was kind of impressed. You only touched it one time. And I just thought it was so interesting how they, you know, they were paying close attention, not just to what I said, but the mannerisms in which I said them. And I think, you know, them coming up afterwards, it wasn't just that they were trying to prove that they were so smart. I think they were really looking for, you know, who is this guy, and is he the real deal? And it doesn't mean we need to be perfect, but we really have to be the real kinds of people that care, that are willing to, you know, sit down for a cup of coffee with these young people and listen to them about the kinds of things, the kinds of frustrations. I mean, what if Megan had a chance to sit down and really talk about her concerns, you know, 4 or 5 years before she sat down to write them out and publish them for, you know, all of the internet to see?
Yeah. Yeah. This generation of 18 to 29-year-olds, of which Megan seems to be a pretty good living example of, however, they're not all cut from the same cloth. You identify at least three different varieties of these kids who grew up with faith and then for whatever reason have left: the prodigals, the nomads, the exiles. Very quickly, how do those three differ?
Well, we assume going into this that each of the faith journeys would be the same, that, you know, everyone loses their faith. And it turns out they're all very different. And again, every story matters. But we found three big themes: that prodigals are those that lose their faith. They say they're no longer Christian, much like Megan, who, you know, used to be Christian, but it doesn't make much sense now. The nomad is someone who wanders away from the church. They're lost to church, but not necessarily to faith. They say things like, you know, the church lost me, but Jesus hasn't yet. And then the exile is someone that feels stuck between two different sources of culture. You know, they feel they're torn between, you know, the church Christianity culture and the broader mass market pop culture that in some cases they feel called to influence. So this is a young person that may work for, you know, a mainstream retailer, a mainstream, you know, media outlet. They may work in Hollywood. They may work in journalism or law. And they feel as though their faith is disconnected. So they feel in tension. We use the term exile, like Daniel, being called into Babylon and still trying to be faithful in that context.
When you come to the end of your book, is it enough to simply, in response to these to this generation, no matter how or why they're leaving the church? I mean, you hear Megan say in one of those clips, you know, she's drawn to the old hymns and she doesn't want to go to a rock concert. Is it enough for a church to simply say, well, we're going to go more liturgical, we're going to be more liturgical, we're going to sing more hymns, we're going to recite the creeds? Is that enough for this generation, or is there more to it than that?
It's a fantastic question, Paul, because I think the thing that I've learned from doing the study is that we all have our pet ideas, our things that we think are the most important way to reach the generation. And even in Megan's comments, you know, it's interesting that there's no shortage of churches that offer hymns or more traditional teaching, and yet she's still disconnected. So it's not simply that we, you know, sort of respond, cater to the perceptions or preferences of this next generation. The question is it enough just to offer hymns or traditional music? And it certainly isn't enough, apparently, for Megan. So, you know, we need to sort of look, I think, at a deeper set of issues, a deeper set of solutions. You know, we point to things like deeper relationships, a study of vocation, how our calling intersects our faith, this idea of wisdom, that God is, you know, revealing wisdom. It's not just information that this generation needs, but true wisdom, which begins with the fear of God. And so, you know, my sense is we need a whole new mind, a whole new perspective. We know the answers. It's not rocket science, but we also have to recognize that we've really failed this generation. For our part, there's a lot of cultural factors, but for our part, there's some things that we could do differently and better. And the more we can look at those things and look at ourselves in the mirror through the light of Scripture, we can do, I think, an even better job for the generation coming up, so we don't lose as many of them for the same reasons with the generation that's now growing up in the church.
And it should be pointed out to the audience, David, that your book is not merely a lament. You're not just doing this research and saying, oh, woe is us, man, we've lost this generation. Every page of the book, threaded throughout the book, I should say, are practical biblical ideas for bringing this generation back. But chapter 12 of your book is worth the price of the book, 50 Ideas to Find a Generation. I think you've got 50 different church leaders that have contributed to a solution to the problem. How important is it? I mean, we've got Presbyterians listening to us, Baptists listening to us, Catholics listening to us. How important is it for us to listen to each other and outside of our own denominational affiliation to get the solution to this problem?
Well, I think it's really important, and I think it's so important that even in, you know, giving up 40 pages of things that I would have liked to have said, you know, and instead gave it to 50 contributors, and I view my role at Barna Group as trying to help start important conversations that matter for Christians, and really to expose people both to great research as well as to many different ideas and ways. And listen, not every idea is for every family or every church, but the whole question is, how do we really get out of our own silo? And that's part of the reason that this generation is so disconnected from the church, is they experience one small piece of God's kingdom, and sometimes it's as much as they need is just to see how beautiful the diversity of God's kingdom, the church, is, from committed Catholics to committed mainline denominations to committed independent churches. That part of what they're looking for may not be in another religion or apart from Christ, but it's just in another expression of Christianity. And for me, I think there's so many ways that we could, as you say, we try to point to the problem, but we're also very hopeful about this generation, about how parents and churches and even young people themselves can respond to some of these trends and again, make a difference with their lives for the sake of others.
Who should read it?
Well, it's for parents, it's for church leaders, youth workers, college leaders. I think senior pastors would benefit from understanding something, just as you said, the one example of, being fact-checked in real time. We talk about a lot of those things. The cultural trend is, how do we disciple make in a new cultural context? And I think young people who are struggling with their faith would find, Megan would find things about the book that help her locate her story and begin to sense that maybe some people are saying some of the things that she has said and also still love the church and still love what Jesus is doing in our culture through young leaders and young entrepreneurs. And maybe she'd find a way, back to faith. So I think we've written it in such a way, through the research and through the voice of these contributors, that it can actually be read across the board. A parent can get great ideas, as can a pastor, as can a young person.
The book is You Lost Me, Why Young Christians Are Leaving Church and Rethinking Faith. The author, David Kinnaman, the president of the Barna Group. You can follow him on Twitter, at David Kinnaman, and learn more about the Barna Group at www.barna.org. And then the website for the book, youlostmebook.org. All of that will be linked later tonight at godandculture.com. David, I always enjoy talking with you.
Paul, likewise. What a great interview. Thank you so much for your time.